Welcome to Module 5 in the Taming Your Tech Habits Masterclass. In this module, we're going to examine some of the small, practical, realistic solutions that you can make to tweak your tech habits so that you can be in control of technology and not the other way around, where it controls and manipulates you. We're really going to explore some practical, realistic, and sustainable habits that you can implement so that technology can be a valuable asset in your life and not something that is compromising your health, or your well-being. My goal for this module is that you'll develop healthy, helpful, and sustainable tech habits so that you're no longer a slave to the screen. So in this module, we're going to look at how technology can be used in a more sustainable and healthy way. So at the beginning of this module, I want you to commit just to one thing. Too often, we try to make changes and we try to implement a whole lot of changes simultaneously. And the research tells us that usually multiple changes occurring simultaneously do not result in sustainable behavioral change. I'm going to suggest what I know many kids do, and that is pick a winner. Pick one change that you can implement today. It really is that kiss simple of keeping it super simple. If you try and make more than one change, it will be much more challenging and it's probably going to result in disappointment. So I want you to pick one change, one habit of what I'm going to suggest today in this particular module and try and implement that change. So I want to start by talking about how do we change our habits, and we're going to go into some of the psychology and evidence as to how we change habits, and then we'll spend the rest of this module looking at some tech habits that you might want to consider changing, bearing in mind that you only need in the first instance to make one of these changes. So don't attempt, as I mentioned before, to make massive changes simultaneously. Set up your new habit to change so that it's engineered in such a way that it's really hard for you to fail. So how do we implement any behavioral change? There are some basic steps. I'm going to go through three core steps and then I'm going to give you a whole lot of practical ideas as to how you can facilitate behavioral change. I know this sounds really dry, but it really has some practical and essential elements that will help you make shifts in your behavior. So the first step is to, obviously, after you've picked your one habit, is to commit to some sort of plan. It doesn't need to be a written document, but some sort of plan as to how you are going to make these changes. Even just mapping out in your mind sort of mental model of how you can execute these changes. Step number two is then to identify your triggers. So is it seeing your phone at night that is the trigger for you to use it? Is it having the laptop out of your briefcase so that you feel obliged to do one check of email before you go to bed? So figure out what your trigger is and then come up with what we call a replacement habit. The research on behavioral change tells us that simply terminating or abruptly stopping a behavior very rarely is effective. What we need to do is crowd out our undesired behavior with something new, what we call a replacement habit. And that's what I'm talking about in the third step, crowd out these habits and focus on implementing these habits every single time the trigger happens. Now, at a bare minimum, we need to be making these changes for 30 days. However, research is telling us that up realistically, we need to make changes for a 66-day period for the change to be habitualized and for it to be entrenched in our way of thinking. So minimum 30 days, realistically about 66 days. So you can see why I'm saying only make one change initially. So tackle one habit at a time. Here are some more practical steps. The smaller and more simpler, the better, because your habit change is difficult. I'm going to be really transparent here. Wanting to stop using your phone before bed sounds really simple, but don't start with trying to do it for a long period of time. Start with perhaps 10 minutes before you go to sleep and then extend your screen-free pre-sleep period over time. So keep it small and simple, get some quick wins under your belt, and then expand your particular goal. Commit your goal to paper or to people, one or the other. Writing it down or telling somebody else gives you the accountability that you may in fact need. And as simple as reminding your colleague, I'm really going to try to stop checking email late at night. This is great because when your colleague is receiving email pings at midnight and 1 a.m. in the morning, they can be a great reminder, hopefully not via email themselves, but a great reminder the next day at work that you perhaps haven't committed to your habit change. Know your motivations for making the change. You've got to be really clear. Basically, we need a purpose behind our behavior. And so you need to have really clear benefits in your head of why you want to make these changes. Maybe you want to stop using your phone at the dinner table so that you're a good role model to your kids, or maybe you're a more connected spouse. But knowing what's driving your behavior, the motivation, will really help you to prioritize this. And if you do have kids, they're great at keeping you accountable, and they're also a really strong motivator for change. This will sound very, unwise advice, and I'm going to say don't start straight away. What I'm suggesting is that you commit to a start date. When you have a quit date or a start date, it gives you a sense of commitment or an air of significance. So commit to something, but then implement your changes at a designated delayed date. As I mentioned before, consider your triggers, but also your obstacles. What are some obstacles that you might face and how might you overcome these? So it might be, what are you going to do when you're faced, you know, your challenge is to not be using email late at night? What are you going to do when you're dealing with a crisis in the office? Or what are you going to do when it's a really busy period and your work does need to expand into the night? Planning your obstacles and response to the obstacles in advance can help. Have strategies to defeat the urge. Urges are inevitable, but the research on urges tells us that they're temporary. They only usually last 1 to 2 minutes and they can be combated. Some of the breathing exercises that we looked at in earlier modules, physical exercise, drinking water, chatting to someone, or any sort of diversional therapy can be great at helping you defeat the urge. Again, it might be a little bit too woo-woo for you, but there is evidence to tell us that visualization can be a really powerful tool to help you make behavioral changes. We've got very strong neuroscientific evidence to show that the brain responds to visualization in exactly almost the identical way to what it actually does when it's experiencing an event. This is why we have musicians and sports stars who mentally rehearse their performances, because we know the neural pathways in their rehearsal are much the same as they are when they actually perform their task. So mentally rehearse your successful habit change. You know, visualize overcoming the urges and what it will look like when you've made this change. It sounds very trivial, but give yourself rewards. Have regular rewards after you've implemented your habit for a certain period of time. And don't wait till the end of the 66 days or even the 30 days. Small rewards along the way can help keep you sustained. Try and sleep and rest. This is a general well-being tool, but we know that when we're tired, we're very vulnerable to behavioral relapses because, again, that frontal lobe, that logical part of the brain that controls our impulses, can't work effectively when we're tired. So probably not the best idea to implement any behavioral change or habit change at the end of the year, at the end of a really busy period at work. Make sure you've got optimal time for sleep and rest. And my last tip here is to get back on the horse. If you fail, figure out what went wrong, plan for it, and try again. Don't let failure be the stop point in your habit change. So there are some practical tips. So now what we're going to do is pick a strategy. So I'm going to give you a plethora of strategies in a moment. Your job is just to pick one or two strategies or approaches that will help you foster healthier relationships with tech so that we can, again, control technology and not the other way around. And in the previous module, I talked about the strategy of proximity, that idea of keeping technology out of sight, out of mind, so we don't reach for our smartphone or our laptop first thing in the morning. Popping phones in the cupboard, keeping the laptop in your briefcase, or leaving your phone in the car when you're at the park with your kids, going to swimming lessons and leaving your digital devices safely secured in your car. These can be, again, a physical trigger for us to reach for technology when we don't, in fact, want to use it. The other part of the proximity strategy is, remember, removing your digital weaknesses from the home screen of your devices. So dragging, for example, social media or games or social connection apps off that home screen and somewhere where you won't be distracted. Another strategy or approach to curb or tweak our tech habits is for us to establish our own personal tech policy. We need to establish tech-free times. Times in the day where we are intentional about perhaps not using technology. And these boundaries need to be both personal and professional. It might be a matter of you deciding that you're not going to use or check your email or check your smartphone before breakfast. Perhaps it's a personal commitment like that. Perhaps it is you deciding that in a client briefing, you are not going to take your smartphone, or it's going to be automatically set up so that whenever a client meeting is scheduled, that you automatically have Do Not Disturb activated because it can sync with your calendar and do that all automatically for you so that you're not disrupted. But having firm boundaries, do you want to be able to go out for dinner with your partner without being bombarded by alerts and notifications? So coming up with personal boundaries. Now, obviously, there need to be exceptions to the rule, perhaps during a busy period of work, maybe it's a family crisis. But we've forgotten, I think, that we can actually choose where we use technology. Because it's become omnipresent and it has become mobile and ubiquitous, we have been deluded into thinking that we should use it wherever we want. This is why we need to create personal boundaries. So we need to compartmentalize our tech use, otherwise it will bleed into every aspect of your life. So if you're making a behavioral change, pick one boundary that you want to implement. Do you want to decide that you'll only respond to work emails during the day, or perhaps you give yourself a small window of 7:30 to 8 p.m. at night, and whatever isn't dealt with in that period is rolled over to the next day? Can you plan three times of the day when you use social media and adhere to these? Maybe it's after you've been for a walk or a run in the morning, on the commute to work, and perhaps on the commute home. Remember, plan where you will use your phone. It is sometimes a better strategy rather than saying where I won't use it. So proactively carving out when you are going to use things as opposed to saying that using technology is contraband at certain times is much more likely to be successful. Related to boundaries is not only having tech-free places, tech-free times, but also tech-free zones. Establish the zones, the places at home or perhaps in your office. Maybe the boardroom is a place where technology doesn't go. Perhaps it's a collaborative workstation or work area where you don't want it to go. At home, nominate specific places where devices aren't used. And this is particularly important if you are a parent. Places that I recommend generally for families that are no-go tech zones include meal areas, bedrooms, bathrooms, cars, and play areas. Now, obviously, each family needs to make their own rules, but establishing zones is really, really critical, not only for our own well-being, but for the role modeling that we're doing for our kids. So I recommend some of those zones be established. So places and times of the day are really critical that we establish boundaries. Well, I also mentioned before, we need to, in an earlier module, track our usage. Many of us are riddled with guilt, are slightly overwhelmed or concerned when we actually quantify exactly how much time we are spending online in general. But then when we drill down into how we are spending that time, many of us are quite concerned. It's a bit like doing a budget for the first time or having a financial tracking tool, and we realize where we're actually spending our time. Now, unlike money that can be spent and also earned, with time and with attention, they're non-renewable resources. We only get to spend them once. So we have to be so conscious and so cognizant of where we spend it. So this is where usage tracking tools can be great. And I'm going to mention a couple here, both on smartphones and on laptops, desktop computers, etc. But we're often not aware of the frequency and the extent of our technology use. This is a little bit like getting on the scales after Christmas and being confronted with just how much weight you've really put on. When we add up our use of technology over a week, the amount of time that we're actually wasting or engaging in non-productive time, particularly during the workday, it's easy for us to see how our productivity and performance is being compromised. But when we couple this with our leisure screen use, we can very quickly see why it is also impacting on our health and well-being. So a couple of tools. One I'm going to recommend for laptops and desktop computers is a tool called Timula. And Timula was developed in Germany, and it's a time tracking tool. It's a visible reminder that can integrate with your phone. So it can send data to your phone, and it can be a great tool because it allows you to quantify both digital and analog experiences. So if you really are the sort of person that gets to the end of the day and think, where did that day go? Didn't seem to get on top of anything. Using this tool really helps you to see, you know, you spent perhaps 50 minutes commuting, you spent 45 minutes on phone calls, you spent an hour on client reports, etc. So it's a visible reminder on your desktop and on your phone, so that you can identify what we call the time sinks or the time holes, and you can eliminate them. How much time are you really spending with emails, non-essential meetings, and unplanned interruptions? So the good thing is that you can find out and then you can take action. So it is connected via Bluetooth, and the software starts tracking. You have a physical device that you pop on your desk, and it physically starts timing how long it's taking you. So perhaps if somebody rings you, you can flip the contraption. You can see on the screen here a small object. Whatever is facing upward, it automatically will start quantifying how much time. So perhaps it's a phone call, perhaps it's a meeting, perhaps it's going out and doing some physical activity. And you've got 8 sides of this particular device that you can personalize. So based on your 8 most frequent tasks that you'll do in the day, you can actually start to track. And the good thing is, again, you get some powerful statistics and insights into how you're spending your time. So that's Timula, again, helping you measure both digitally and analog how your day is being spent. Something I really strongly encourage you to look at, whether you're an Android or an iOS user, are the 2 new, relatively new features. In late 2018, iOS released an update, iOS 12, and they brought out a function that's been quite popular, quite controversial at times, called Screen Time. And not long before that, Google also brought out a suite of tools as part of their digital well-being package. And basically, these 2 tools, regardless of the platform that you use, help impose limits on what we can access and when we can use technology. And these big tech companies are responding to the perceived need that many people are saying, I'm addicted to my phone or to the technology. I literally can't turn it off. So these tools allow us to create usage reports. You can either get a daily or a weekly report. You can set downtime. So if you really find it hard to stop scrolling or sending emails at night, you can have a bedtime where it literally cuts you off. Or you can apply a daily app limits. So you can set limits on categories such as entertainment, games, or even have limits for specific apps. So if Facebook is your digital weakness, you can specify that you only want to spend certain amounts of time. With Android Pie, and as I mentioned, these are available on both iOS. So iOS, it's called Screen Time. You can see your usage, but you can also then curb your behaviors. So again, this might be your one goal, that you want to spend less time on social media. And so this is where we can actually use technology and get it to help us, again, us controlling it and not the other way around, where we can prescribe limits. Digital well-being is the Google function, and it gives us a much better understanding of how we interact with technology and also how frequently. And again, there are functional tools that we can use within it to limit and curb our time. So the dashboard gives you a complete overview of how much time. You can get weekly overviews, you can do weekly comparisons. So if you're somebody who really likes the data, this can be quite helpful. And also if you want some accountability, if you're trying to curb your behaviors. You can also set, with most of our social media sites now, you can now set what I call social limits. So, for example, and all of this is in the PDF handout accompanying this module, with Instagram, you can go to the activity dashboard and you can obviously see the daily average of the amount of time you've spent on the app. But you can use a function called Daily Reminder, and this will actually set a time limit and you'll receive notifications when you've reached your time limit. You can also mute push notifications. With YouTube, you can actually monitor how much time you have spent watching random cat videos. And again, you can also set a reminder to encourage you to take a break after a certain amount of time. And the good thing is you can also disable autoplay. And you can have a function called Schedule Digest, so you can get all of your alerts bundled together. So perhaps you're going to save all of your YouTube time on the commute home from work. That's going to be your time to relax and get your social fix then. Perhaps you can get all of your YouTube notifications during that allocated period of time. Facebook, well, while I'm recording this particular module, it was still under development. But you can set something called time on Facebook. And again, you can manage your time and you can mute push notifications. So I think it's rather a powerful reminder. If our tech companies are giving us these tools, they're very aware of the addictive, captivating nature of the technologies. Another tool that you can use if your self-control is not so great, if you find it hard to impose limits, especially if you're using, for example, desktop computers and phones, and sometimes some of these tools work better on phones as opposed to desktops and laptops, a tool called Mute, or Just Muted is the website. It provides phone and computer tools that will restrict your usage. So this tool tracks your time, the amount of time you're spending online. It tracks the number of phone pickups and it will log your what they call detox streak. So it really encourages you to have unplugged mind wandering mode that we spoke about in an earlier module. So there are a wealth, ironically, of digital tools that will help you to curb your behavior. I mentioned in an earlier module, Rescue Time is another great tool. It measures and improves your performance, and it will obviously improve your productivity. It helps you to block distractions. So not only can it measure how you're spending time, but if you're supposed to be writing a proposal, you are supposed to be working on a presentation, but instead you open the browser and check the latest cricket scores, or you're doing a little bit of online shopping, you can actually restrict what browsers you can open, what tools you can open at certain times. So Rescue Time gives you not only the usage data, but it also gives you some, it prohibits you from accessing other tools. And again, you get reports and you can track time. Another tool is called Freedom. And again, all of these are in the handout. Freedom is the app and the website blocker, and it works on Mac, Windows, Androids, and iOS devices. And over 750,000 people at the time of recording it are actually using this to reclaim their focus. So using this particular tool, again, you can set periods of time when you want to access particular websites, tools, or apps. You can track your usage and you can also get performance scores. But again, this one, like most of these, is simply measuring your digital access and digital time. Tool like Timula measures both the online and offline activities. So I just wanted to make that distinction there. So there you have module 5. As I said at the outset, I encourage you to pick one habit that you'd like to change, plan it, tell people, or tell it to a piece of paper, and then commit to that change. Then plan your replacement habit, identify some strategies that will help you to prevent your urges, and plan some incremental rewards. Then I also encourage you to set up either screen time or explore some of the digital well-being tools that you can use, so that you can tweak the time you are spending online, or perhaps tweak when you are spending your time online. And then if you're also interested in setting up a digital tool to perhaps monitor your usage or block your computer habits as well. That's it for module 5. In our final module 6, we're going to look at how you can optimize your productivity. What are some simple technology strategies, some productivity principles, and general well-being habits that we can implement to make sure that we get the most out of this online space we're working in. I'll see you then.